Hello, boys and girls. Welcome in to the Boys and Girl Podcast with Cowboys NFL Network reporter Jane Slater and NFL Network producer Bobby Belt. A Cowboys community with the inside scoop on the Dallas Cowboys. Now, coming straight to you from the Lone Star State, here's Jane and Bobby.
Well, what a day at the Star in Frisco here on this Tuesday. Now, when we showed up here, it was going to be a light day of practice. Obviously, the Cowboys just coming back from their bye week. They have the day off on Wednesday. And then their Thursday looks like a Wednesday. Of course, the big news we thought was going to be talking to these Cowboys players about Michael Bennett and the trade that happened next week. And we'll get to that. But the bigger story that surfaced today was the Cowboys seem like they weren't done making trades, Bobby.
No, it looked like there for a while everybody was buzzing about this potential Jamal Adams trade. And Adams is a guy that I think Cowboys fans have coveted for a while. I mean, of course, anybody who's from the DFW Metroplex and follows the high school football scene is familiar with what a stud he was in the Carrollton area playing at Hebron High School with actually Dallas Cowboys practice squad member Daniel Wise. They were teammates there, but then had a great career over at LSU, which there's so many LSU fans in the area. So there's always been this fondness in this area, I think, for Jamal Adams and the type of player he is. And you know, with the frustrations that exist at the safety position for the Cowboys, I think this is something fans have really wanted. But it seems clear at this point that it's something the Cowboys are kind of longing for. As much as Steven said around the draft, maybe you can, you know, maybe we could say that we've potentially devalued the safety a little bit more than other positions. We haven't valued it quite as much. It does seem like they're starting to wonder if they're getting enough out of there just with the flirtations with Earl Thomas and considering drafting safeties and then this potential trade for Jamal Adams that just didn't happen.
It didn't happen. And there were moments where it felt like there was some momentum. We were 12 minutes away from the deadline. I'd gotten a tip from a source that passing game coordinator Chris Richard, head coach Jason Garrett, as well as their safeties coach were heading into a meeting, and the feeling, at least the buzz in the building, was this Jamal Adams deal is getting done potentially. And here's what's exciting about Jamal Adams, aside from the fact that he has these local ties and has expressed an interest in wanting to come to Dallas, 24 years old, a guy that has playing experience. He's 24 years old, very similar to what they went out and did with Amari Cooper, who at the time, 24 years old, had 4 years of playing time under his belt. It makes it a lot more palatable for a team to say, we're going to go out there and trade a first round pick for a guy that is young, doesn't have a history of major injuries, and also has meaningful playing time behind him. This is a vet of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look in the draft this year, they seriously looked at a guy like Juan Thornhill.
Yep.
They didn't go out and get him. Instead, they went and got Tristan Hill, a guy who has seen very little playing time, even when this defensive line has needed his help.
Yeah.
No Randy Gregory this year. Taco Charlton got traded to the Miami Dolphins. And then Tyrone Crawford just went on IR.
Yeah, and you've had injuries to Antoine Woods at times. And, you know, we had the suspension with Robert Quinn. And now, obviously, Tristan Hill doesn't play on the edge. But this is a team that struggled up the middle and could use a really good defensive tackle. And the fact that Tristan Hill, a lot of games, can't even get active does make you wonder, while Juan Thornhill is, like, leading the Chiefs in defensive snaps right now and making plays for them, it does make you wonder a little bit if, not long term, I think the Cowboys knew that Tristan Hill was a project player. He wasn't necessarily somebody that was going to jump in and you know, take over right away. He was raw. But it does make you wonder if they're kind of second-guessing themselves a little bit and saying, should we have made the more immediate, potentially short-sighted decision and gone with the safety that maybe would be playing for us right now over this defensive tackle who could be playing for us in 2 years?
And look, they didn't take Juan Thornhill. They flirted with the idea of Earl Thomas. And when I say flirt, a lot of people characterize these as serious talks. And I had said the whole time, there weren't meaningful conversations with Earl because Earl wanted to get paid. And the Cowboys were not prepared to pay a player at his age, with his history of injuries, that sort of money and a new contract to come to Dallas.
I think that and to clarify, because I think you agree with this too, I think that when it reached free agency, that's where it was unrealistic. I do think that back when he bowed before their sideline and stuff, I do think there were trade talks. I think the Cowboys had flirted with that more seriously than they flirted with him as a free agent option.
The takeaway that I got, Bobby, that whole time was that it wasn't anything super serious. And so obviously the media characterized it that way. I think there was a desire to bring him to Dallas, but I never got the sense in talking to my team sources that that ever was anything serious.
And I mean, it's funny. You mentioned this about the, you know, Amari Cooper's one guy and you know, he's 24 years old and he was younger and you had control for a little bit. It was funny that at the press conference, he actually got asked by Todd Archer, Jason Garrett did about, you know, are you guys a little bit more hesitant to give up these big pieces though? Like, you know, a first round pick, are you guys having missed that last year? Are you a little hesitant to give it up this year? And, you know, Garrett didn't say no. He sort of just said, well, Amari Cooper made a lot of plays for us and he was 24. And that's what Jamal Adams is. So I
and they went 7-2 after acquiring him.
Yeah.
He was the missing piece on that offense. He was the piece that when we were at training camp, they said we were going to try and do this tight end wide receiver by committee thing. And it was an abject failure for them.
Oh, yeah.
So they, you know, they started off the season 3-5. They pick up Amari Cooper. It ends up being a difference maker for them. 7-2. I actually went to Amari Cooper in the locker room on Tuesday and I said, can you give a guy like Michael Bennett any wisdom coming in and getting traded? Being true to Amari, nothing's really changed. He said, no, he didn't really have any real insider advice for him. But what I would say is if you look to a guy like Amari to the front office, this should have at least been a lesson that this was a trade where you gave up a first rounder that made sense. There's been a lot of guys that they flirted with around here. We've heard their names come up, like Ndamukong Suh in the past and things like that, that I got, right? The price tag was too high. Jamal Adams was one of those, even though when I reached out to a team source and I said, okay, why was it too pricey? They told me they didn't want to get into the specifics out of respect for the Jets, but that they essentially wanted a lot, but a little bit more than Jalen Ramsey.
Or a little bit less.
A little bit less than Jalen Ramsey. So in order to refresh that for you, it was what? Two first rounders and a fourth.
It was two first rounders and a fourth. So what does a little less mean? Does a little less mean not the fourth rounder and they wanted two firsts? Or maybe it's a first and a second and a fourth? Or I mean, a little bit less definitely. But I mean, you're in the ballpark of Jalen Ramsey. And maybe that's the thing. Maybe the Cowboys are shrewd enough to say, we'll give up one first rounder because we can kind of see immediately into this next draft class. We can see how this player is going to impact us now. But man, you're asking us to give up two first rounders potentially. Now we're into a class that we don't even really know yet. We don't know where we are as a team yet. That's not something we're comfortable doing.
And see, here's where, again, I struggle with this idea a little bit because you've got your quarterback on lock. That's a situation that's going to get done. It just is.
Yeah.
You've got your running back for the future. He's locked in. You've got your offensive line, but you're going to need to have some depth in your next couple of drafts to assist with some of the breakdown of that. At tight end, I think they feel pretty good about Blake Jarwin's development. Yeah. The way Jason Witten's playing, he's at least got another year. So offense, I think, is taken care of. I think in the next draft, they're going to have to really start focusing again on defensive line, safety, and corner. But if you can shore up the safety with two first-round picks...
But that's the thing. You do have three things
again,
potentially.
At his age.
Well, and I mean, let's and here maybe this is
a vet of sorts.
Let's put yourself in the Cowboys. And look, you would have even had more control over Jamal Adams than you had over Amari Cooper when you traded for him, because Amari Cooper was a year and a half left on his deal. The Cowboys, if they would have pulled the trigger on the deal, would have had two and a half years.
And you could have, in theory, I guess, traded him if you'd wanted to.
Sure, if things didn't work out,
right.
Or you don't have to hold on to it, you know, for forever. And there's a fifth year option there they could have declined, which they wouldn't have, but they could have if they needed to. But it's interesting to see that the Cowboys, I think, you know, Tyron Smith's getting more banged up. Travis Frederick has had his health issues. Zach Martin's had his back issues. They're still, I don't think, completely sure what they have with Connor Williams or what his future is.
Lyle Collins had an injury this year.
As they're sitting here trying to determine how much they're going to invest and for how long they're going to invest in their quarterback, they know they're going to do it, but they don't quite know what the figures are yet. If so much of that, you know, they're investing so much in that, they're going to want to invest in protecting that asset, which will include the guys up front. And so, I mean, That may be something that they had a conversation about, is that when they look at, okay, giving up two first-round picks for Jamal Adams, though, means we're potentially setting ourselves up to be 2 years into the future or 3 years into the future and 3 years more of these guys potentially breaking down before we can even have a crack at a first-round pick to protect Dak up front.
But while you have all this talent right now and the window is, again, we keep talking about the window is closing with Jerry Jones, why not put your chips on the table now?
And I think
because how much longer, again, we're now into the fourth season with Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah.
You know, and I get not wanting to leverage the future, mortgage your future, go down the list. Mm-hmm. But if the mentality is sort of win now and you just put a couple of added pieces on this team, that safety position is something we've been talking about for literally the last 3-4 years.
Right. Yeah, no, and I think
how much longer are they going to be talking about it?
The only thing there for the Cowboys, I think, is, of course, they're in this win now mode, but they have, I mean, it's a huge shift from the days of the past of giving up 2 first-round picks for Joey Galloway or other things where you end up mortgaging the future. I mean, we saw how brutal it was for the Cowboys when they were without first-round picks for 2-3 years in a row.
Where they went and spent $50 million on Brandon Carr at corner.
Yeah, I think as much as Jerry wants this and recognizes this as a window, I also think that it's more terrifying the thought to potentially go all in this window. And then if it doesn't fall apart, then you have no future for the next few years after that.
But I'm telling you, I think it's less Jerry, more Steven.
It probably was more Steven, but I don't know if you may disagree with this, but I think if it was just the Jets had said, give us a first for Jamal Adams, I think the Cowboys pull the trigger on that.
I think first.
With as much as they wrestled over potentially what sounded like it could have been up to 2 first-round, I think a single first-round pick they would have done it, or maybe a first and a fifth, I think the Cowboys pull the trigger
on that. I agree. I think if it was a first and a fifth, possibly, but I think it was the fact that they wanted, I got the sense it was 2 first-rounders plus one of those mid-round picks, and I think that is what essentially was a little bit too much for them.
Unfortunate, because I
do think if you think of the what if, and again, this isn't taking away from, you know, Jeff Heath. I think Jeff Heath has had some nice plays over the years. I think Xavier Woods, I was expecting a little bit more out of him at camp. He showed up so chippy. He talked about this chip on his shoulder, that he was a little disrespected, that people wanted to go out and acquire a guy like Earl Thomas, but they just, the safety position for whatever reason in Dallas.
Which, to be fair, Xavier Woods
named
did.
Name the last great safety in Dallas.
Oh, gosh. I mean, you're like Darren Woodson, Roy Williams. I mean, it's been years.
The fact that my sports savant can't just readily name
you. Well, I had Roy Williams, but I didn't know if like somebody would take issue with me saying he's a great safety. The last great safety was Darren Woodson. But, I mean, yeah, that was 2003. But I do think that, you know, when you look at how the Cowboys have structured this and knowing that if we were to have to give up multiple first-round picks, we just lost a first. I mean, you're then looking at 3 straight years potentially without a first-round pick. You're looking at, it's not a big pick, but you gave up a 7th, 6th conditional, you know, for Michael Bennett. You then probably would have had to give up an extra mid-round pick for Jamal Adams. You're signing your guys. These guys aren't walking away, which means you're not getting compensatory selections. You're not getting extra mid-round picks. I think it looked too bare into the future for them to be willing to do it.
We're here to talk you off the ledge, Cowboys fans.
Yeah, now look, I mean, no doubt, like I am Jamal Adams, I think, and I said this to you when we first started hearing the rumors. If they would have traded for Jamal Adams, I immediately would have thought they're like, that's the NFC favorite now. The Cowboys are 100% the NFC favorite.
You don't think they're the NFC favorite now?
No, I mean, I think San Francisco's defense is playing too good to say they're the NFC favorite.
I'm just messing with you.
No, I know. No, you know, it's funny. I was having this conversation with John Machota from The Athletic last week that don't you think that the Cowboys sitting at 4-3 right now with the way they've played, that's as bad as their record could possibly be? Because they're 4 games that they've won. They've blown the teams out. It's not like it's been, you know, a play here or there. The 3 games that they've lost have been the games where it could have gone either way. They haven't been winning close ball games. And so it feels a lot like with the way they've played on Sundays, 4-3 is about as bad as they could be. And they're potentially a play or two away from it being up to 7-0, losing games by 2 points.
Have you looked at some of the games they've got left, Bobby?
I know it. I know. I'm not saying that the schedule the rest of the way isn't difficult. I'm just saying that.
Hold on. Let me walk that one back.
Sure.
So you think at 4-3, mm-hmm. even though they've lost to I always equate that Miami game as a loss, even though they won it, because it felt like a loss. It felt like a loss early on in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking that this is the worst they're going to look all season
bye. No. Let me
look down the stretch, and we've got Patriots, you've got the Bears on the road, you've got the Eagles at the link.
No. Let me clarify. I didn't make that clear.
Let's clarify.
No. Here's what I'm looking at. I'm saying that when you look at the way they played in each of the first 7 games,
okay,
and that you just take how they played in each of those games, you would say that, okay, well, the 4 games that they won handily. So those weren't a play, like they weren't a play or two away from losing those.
Okay, and the three with the games exception they, of the Philly game.
Well, they won by 27, though.
Right. With the exception of the Philly game, mm-hmm. I thought the Philly game was when they actually looked like a team
sure.
that you could hang your hat on.
Yeah.
The way they played, their backs were against the wall. People were saying that this team wasn't what everyone expected them to be. They had crowned them too early as a preseason Super Bowl favorite. Mm-hmm. But when I look at some of their other games this year, the way they won, I'm not overly convinced that this is a team that can win against the Saints, that can win against the 49ers.
Yeah, no, I get, and I agree with that. I'm just saying that I think that they are, I think when you look at how they've played in the games, the worst, like they are a couple plays away from being 7-0. If they don't have the drop touchdown from Amari, they lose by 2 points to the Jets and the Packers. I'm saying one play in each of those games potentially changes the outcome of those games, whereas the four games they won were not one play differences. So I'm saying the way that they've played on Sundays, 4-3 is about as bad as their record could be through seven games. That's a, like the bottom. They've played, their record has played out as bad as it possibly could for the way that they've played.
I wish the fans listening could see my face as I allow him to walk us through this optimism.
I get this look on her face like three times. Usually I'll make it was so funny. You guys should have seen.
I guess my argument is the eyeball test, seeing these guys at camp,
yeah.
I assumed the record would be better than what it is.
Oh, yeah, that's my point. I'm saying they have played.
Because when you looked at the front end of this schedule, mm-hmm. that front end of the schedule was the same schedule. We were saying they don't need Ezekiel Elliott for the first six games. They're going to go out there and dominate these teams. It's the back half of the schedule that's going to be so tough.
Right.
So when I look at the 4-3 record, it's because I anointed them so high mm-hmm. that my expectations for this team have fallen short. And quite frankly, Bobby, I think if you talk to some of the guys in the locker room, they feel that they have fallen short of their own expectations of what this season could have been.
And I think it's interesting. I think that's something that's really set in with them in the last couple weeks.
Oh, I felt it today.
Yeah, because I think when you looked at after the Saints game, they kind of made some excuses. Packers was a little bit of a wake up and, oh, okay, this is it. When they lost to the Jets, they're like, we've royally screwed up here, like on our end. Like, this is, we have dropped the ball here. And then
about that one.
Yeah, you saw them come out again. And that's when you heard, I thought it was great when.
See, I always think of Miami being the most demoralizing game again, even though they won
kind
that.
Kind of started the funk for them.
Right. But I how could I have forgotten? Of course, it's easy to forget that Jets game.
Yeah, no. And, you know, I think that they came out of that Jets game, and I think it was a slap and, you know, back to reality. And they go, we're really close to losing the season if we don't get it right. And so I think that you saw them come out against Philly. And when the question came to Dak after the Philly game, and it was like, you know, why does the backs against the wall always have to? And he said, we're going to handle success better now. And I think that's the thing. I think that's something that they really do seem to, and it's super optimistic maybe, but like, I do feel like when you talk to the guys in the locker over the last week or so, it does feel like they're understanding that we understand what happened that got us to a place where we lost three in a row, like mentally inside this locker room, and we're correcting that moving
forward. That statement was so fascinating to me, and I say that because, you know, Dak winning the way that he did his rookie season,
mm-hmm.
literally taking over the reins from Tony Romo, who, again, was not even allowed to compete for his job back.
Right.
And the way they handled success that year, the fact that this year, after just a couple of games,
but isn't that
they feel like they can't handle success? Like, I feel like they handled success really well for a bunch of rookies.
But wasn't that the thing? It was kind of, you know.
I think if anything, they drank the Kool-Aid. They listened to a lot of us in the media.
And that was the difference. The difference
hyping
was,
them up.
The difference was the expectation.
For whatever reason, mm-hmm. Maybe it starts with the quarterback, because Dak has talked about this before. He's always had a chip on his shoulder. Remember, he's always gotten the starting job because somebody has been injured, and then he's never given it back.
Yeah,
he's
the first person to put out that note that I remember. That stuck with me. I heard you report that his rookie year, that at high school, college, and the NFL, he got the starting job by a guy getting hurt
and never
was
gave
not
it back.
Supposed to keep it and kept it at all three spots.
He's just a guy.
He's a warrior.
There are just certain people, for whatever reason, they do better when their backs are against the wall, when people doubt them. They love the bulletin board material. They love
D-Law, for instance.
D-Law, he thrives
he lives
in it. He loves it. You know, it was that quote that had a lot of people scratching their head when Amari Cooper said that Jason Garrett, ahead of that Eagles game, said, get comfortable being uncomfortable. But he took it a step further. And Amari, being the philosophical guy that he is, I asked him, I said, well, what resonated, what message? And he said, it wasn't that he just said, be comfortable being uncomfortable. It was thrive in being uncomfortable. And I got the sense that these guys, this group, do better when you're not anointing them and giving them A pluses. They want the failing grade. They want you to bank against them. They want you to believe that they are not capable of success. It's weird.
I have actually a good story about this one, which I don't think I've ever told before. So I think I've told you, but I don't think I've ever tweeted it or said it anywhere. This past summer, Dak Prescott was at a youth football camp that Aqib Talib was putting on. Aqib Talib and Dak Prescott, they share the same agent. And so they've got a relationship there. And Aqib Talib was putting on a football camp in North Texas. Dak was out there, and I was talking with our mutual friend, the wide receiver skills trainer, David Robinson. And we were talking about Dak's improvement that I had been seeing out at these practices during the offseason. And I'd said, you know, I'll pull up a video real quick that the Cowboys website posted. And it was this beautiful pass down the sideline where he hits, he hit one of the receivers down the sideline, just dropped a dime in a bucket from 40 yards out. And D-Rob sees this, and Dak was walking along on the other side, and D-Rob calls him over, and he said, pull that up again, show him this. And so I pulled up the clip, and I turned it over to Dak, and D-Rob goes, you know, oh, you're nice now, huh? You think you're nice? He said, and Dak smiled, but then very seriously just said to D-Rob, he said, no, he's like, y'all got to stop making me feel good. He said, I want y'all to say I can't do it. I need that. And that's the type of guy he is.
It fueled me in my own personal career.
Yes.
Honestly. I mean, when I think about all the stops that I've made and how long it took me to get where I got, I typically did better when people told me I couldn't do something. My dad's favorite thing to say to me is, tell me the one thing you failed at today. My dad is the type of guy that, you know, that's how he motivated me. So look, as much as I'm sitting here criticizing the guys, I sort of understand it in my own sort of personal journey into the sportscasting business that sometimes we thrive in being uncomfortable.
Sure. And I think that Dak, though, he made it clear, and I think we've seen it. You can read, Dak reads better than when he speaks. When you read it back, you get more of it. And it does seem like he has taken to heart that we're going to handle this better. And so I do believe they're going to handle it better in the second half of the season.
And quick update on the Dak contract. I know there was some talk from Stephen Jones earlier in the week when he said this on The Fan.
Stephen, are there any giant glaring weaknesses of Dak's that you'd like to throw out there for negotiation purposes?
Absolutely not. In my mind, he's flawless. So the only thing we need him to do is work with us a little bit, and I understand because it's his money and it's easy for someone else to say, but the only reason, you know, we're having a negotiation is to, you know, talk him into all the reasons why it's good to have a good supporting cast around him. And, you know, other than that, it'd be real easy to write the check. It's not saving Jerry and I any money. What we're trying to do is, you know, keep this young football team together. We think it's a really good one. We think it's only going to get better because it is young. And, you know, other than that, this negotiation would have been over with, you know, months ago. But I think he understands where we're coming from. We understand where he's coming from. And ultimately, we'll figure this out.
Now, I talked to my team sources about this, Bobby, because a lot of people have been trying to figure out, well, why hasn't this deal gotten done? It was my understanding they haven't talked in a while. So there was no discussion during the bye week, according to my team sources. And while I'd reported and Todd France took issue with this earlier this summer, when I said that the initial asking price, again, I was told was $40 million, but everyone's going to ask for that price that's sort of that hits the ceiling.
The report came afterwards. Zeke asked for 20 a year.
Right.
He settled for 15.
So, right. So you ask for a number that's here. Since then, I've been told that he's come down. The number is closer to a 33, 35-ish. But for whatever reason, they're still not able to get this deal done. Now, both sides still seem very confident that the deal is getting done when you talk to both parties. But an interesting statement from Stephen Jones this week, or during the bye week, worth pointing out, like I said, that it seems like both sides still think this is going to get done, but it hasn't.
The fact that number has come down to what it is, And I think the Cowboys.
That was the number I think that they were always working. I think both sides were assuming it was going to get to.
And
the fact that it's come to that is why I'm perhaps a little shocked that it hasn't gotten done. So no Jamal Adams, no new contract for Dak Prescott during the bye week, but you did get this guy.
Michael Bennett is headed to the Dallas Cowboys in exchange for a 2021 seventh round pick that is actually conditional. It's going to become a sixth round pick.
We've been trying to block him for a number of years and had an opportunity to get him and bring him on board. And we think he can help our football team.
Hats off to, you know, Will and the guys in the front office for making these big time moves.
I'm just excited to have him in the locker room and be a part of our D-boys. We're going to make something happen.
His resume speaks for his job. He has the talent and it went and got him for a reason.
When they bring a guy in, we understand that. He can help our cause and get to a Super Bowl and winning it, but it's all about maintaining our details and focusing on week by week.
Now, we were in the Cowboys locker room on Tuesday, and of course, a light day, sort of like their Mondays after a game. They have the day off on Wednesday, and then it's back to work on Thursday. And we did get the opportunity to catch up with a few of the players, namely the president of the Hot Boys organization here, the defensive line, and asked him what he thought of this Michael Bennett pickup, and more specifically, is this a guy that fits in with the Hot Boys culture?
The attitude, the swagger that he brings, I feel like that Hot Boy culture is already in him. It's just all about being with the right group.
Now look, DeMarcus Lawrence, I sort of loved what he said about him in the sense that, you know, look, he has that attitude. He sort of fits into the swag of the team. When you look at guys like Robert Quinn, who has been such a nice addition to this team, and seeing what he's been able to do, a guy like DeMarcus Lawrence. But I did think it was also interesting that DeMarcus almost made it seem like, yes, he's here, but it's a little bit of competition now for a guy like DeMarcus Lawrence.
Man, Bennett on the field,
and Quinn,
somebody got to get a sack. They got to beat me to it. The end.
Do you all welcome that competition out there, then?
Oh, absolutely. That's what we live for. I mean, that's the whole point of playing this game. If you have competition, you have greatness to be. So competition don't do nothing but bring greatness out to you.
Seems like he kind of likes the fact that you've got a guy pushing him a little bit. And that was something that Robert Quinn said to me when I brought it up to him.
You know, when you bring in, you know, a talented player like Bennett, I'm going to just take it as a personal talent. You don't want someone to come in and outshine you. So, I mean, you're just trying to, not in a disrespectful way. It's more just bringing the best out of a person. You know, which makes it exciting because, you know, you need someone to push you. Never, as we say, never get comfortable where you're at. So, I mean, just, you know, adding, pushing us to get better. I mean, I'm not saying we haven't been working hard and been doing that, but I have just a little, you know, wrinkle, you know, that they brought in. I think it could be great for us, but like I said, I keep saying his resume speaks for itself, so you can't let him come in here and take all the shine.
There is a little bit of pride with this group.
They're competitive. I remember I was talking to Antoine Woods at the end of last year's training camp when he kind of burst onto the scene and took a roster spot when nobody was really expecting it. It was a stacked defensive line group, and some good players ended up having to get cut in the process. And I remember I asked him about that. I said, you know, is that a little difficult, you know, knowing that some guys are going to be, and he said, like, no, he said, that's what pushes us to be what we are, is that competition. And, you know, we're going to miss certain guys, you know, their friends or whatever, but at the end of the day, this is a business and this is a competition, and it's not just competing against the guy across from you, it's competing against the guy next to you for those snaps. And he said, and I think that's, as much as that drives all across the team, I think it really drives that defensive line room.
Well, you know, it was interesting. We talked to Robert Quinn on Tuesday. We talked to DeMarcus Lawrence. But the one guy that literally lit up when I asked him about Michael Bennett, and keep in mind, I'm talking about Leighton Van Der Esch. This is a guy who has the same sort of intensity as Sean Lee. Like, he has a great personality, but he's so intense like Sean. You know, he takes everything very seriously. He was almost childlike.
Which we never see.
Which we never see. When I asked him about Michael Bennett, you have to hear this.
I love it. I love it. I mean, I watched him a lot when he was at Seattle. And then obviously when he was at Philly and in New England. So, I mean, to get a vet like him, Pro Bowler on the team, it's good energy. So, I love it. I love the trade.
So when you got that first text, did you get it from a teammate? Did you see it across the news wires?
I saw it on the media, yeah.
So what was your initial reaction?
I was like, okay, let's go. I was like, okay, we made a good move. So
it's good to see
him around the facility now and today during practice. So, yeah, it's awesome.
Was he pretty scrappy out there? Or jawing a lot?
I mean, he just brings energy. He's just radiant. So, and I love that about him. So I think he's going to bring in even more of an energy like that to our defense. And that's what we need. So we love guys like that.
All right. So it's a nice piece to add to the locker room. But there were a lot of questions about Michael Bennett when the trade was announced, namely a guy that is real big into social activism, something that they sort of gave a knock on Robert Quinn when he came here because he put his fist up.
That was a question.
That was a big question. There was also the fact that this guy has been with four teams in 24 games. In other words, does he rub teams the wrong way? So we figured we didn't get Michael Bennett in the locker room on Tuesday. We hope to get him when we're back there on Thursday and bring that to you on Friday. But we found the next best thing for you.
We did. Doug Hendrickson is going to join us now. He is the executive vice president of football at Wasserman. And Doug has actually been named this year, the most recent list, as one of the top sports agents by Forbes. And he has negotiated over $500 million in active NFL contracts. And he is actually the agent for one of the newest Dallas Cowboys, Michael Bennett. And he's here to talk to us a little bit about Michael and what he brings to the table. Doug, how are you doing today?
Good. Well, I need to hire you guys as my PR team. I like that. I like the opening. I got to record that and get that out to the world. But I appreciate it. And I'm doing great other than the fires up here in Northern California where I live. And it's been without power for 4 days. So it's been brutal. We're safe and all that. But it's devastating stuff that's going on. But other than that, I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Before we even get to Michael Bennett, I got to ask you, how close are they to your house?
So I'm in Marin County, and all of Marin, 100% of Marin is without power for the last 4 days.
Wow.
It's Tiburon, Sausalito, Marin, all that stuff. And so the fires are in Healdsburg and Sonoma, which is only, 45 miles away. So it's obviously very smoky and whatnot. And so we're fine, our house and all that stuff. But obviously up there in wine country, it's been pretty devastating. So it's brutal. It's brutal to see and watch and have a lot of people I know up there that are affected and whatnot. So it's not fun.
Well, obviously sports news important, that much more important. Glad to see that you and your family are doing safe. So let's dive into this Michael Bennett stuff.
Yeah. First off, I guess lead off with, there's a lot of chatter about, well, has Michael Bennett fallen off? Why was he available 1 year after such a great year, in Philadelphia? I guess just talk about what kind of a player the Cowboys are getting in Michael Bennett.
Well, first of all, you're getting an elite pass rusher, an elite player, Pro Bowl player. Remember, he had 9 sacks last year. He went to New England. They gave him a pay raise to go there. But really, just it purely comes down to schematically, they shifted their defense after he got there to really a 2-5-4 per se, or 2-4-5, however you want to put it. And so they were not using their defensive ends a whole lot. And so it really came down to, he's done nothing wrong or, fallen out of favor with him. It's more of a situation where thematically he wasn't being used, and, you can't argue with what the Patriots are doing. They're 8-0. And so really came down to, getting the right fit for Michael. He feels he's got, a couple years left in him to play. And the Cowboys have always been intriguing to him. And I think that defense fits him much better, but no, they're getting a great player, a guy that can rush the passer from the inside to the outside for 10, 11 years. He's got a lot of life in him, and he's excited to do what he does best and get to the quarterback.
So much life in him that he is known for his outspoken personality, some of his social activism off the field, which, a lot of people would argue is not a bad thing. In fact, Robert Quinn in the locker room today, very supportive of that. But I think one of the narratives when this news came out, just to be frank with you, was 4 different teams in 24 games. In other words, he wears on teams, but it sounds like you're just telling us this was more of a schematic thing with him in New England, possibly some philosophical differences, not so much of a falling out with the teammates. Help us set that narrative straight.
Yeah, look, I mean, if you go back to Seattle, I had a lot of those guys, Marshawn Lynch and obviously Bennett and those guys up there. And that was a move at that time when they were getting rid of their old regime. They got rid of, obviously, Cliff and Bob, not Bobby, but Cliff and Earl left, and Cam got hurt, and they were kind of getting rid of the old guys and starting fresh. So that was purely just a move to get younger in Seattle. He goes to Philly, has a great year, does what he's got to do, and arguably, they move on from him, and no one really knows why they moved on from him. I don't quite know. They needed help. But teammates wise, I've always loved Michael. He's got some massive supporters everywhere he's gone, and as well as coaches and all that too. You know, Michael does obviously speak his mind. We all know, look, we're all in borrowed time. Life is short. And, you know, you got to live life how you want to live it, because you never know when it's going to end. And Michael's always lived that way. He's a great father, three beautiful daughters, great wife, the whole deal. But yeah, it really, Seattle was a pure getting younger, a shift in their culture. Philly, quite honestly, didn't make a lot of sense to me. But he goes to New England and they give him a raise. And then it purely came down to they shifted their defense. And that's all it was. If you looked at all their defensive ends, no one was playing really more than Michael. It was always kind of the same amount. So the Cowboy fans will love what they see in Michael. He's a passionate guy. He's a leader. Teammates love him. I've already talked to Jalen Smith, one of my clients, and Justin March there, and he says he's fitting right in and doing great. And they'll love what they have to see.
You know, when you look at we haven't got a chance to talk to Michael yet. Locker was open today, but Michael had already finished for the day, so we haven't got a chance to speak to him yet. I'm sure you have. What kind of excitement does he have about specifically coming to Dallas? Is this an opportunity he's really looking forward to?
Yeah, look, he's really excited. I mean, he didn't want to leave New England. I mean, look, he went there and was you know, hoping to be there the next couple of years and go from there. But obviously, when it kind of came down to them possibly moving on, you know, Dallas was the team he wanted to go to. I mean, he's obviously from Houston. He played with Chris Richard in Seattle, knows him very well, knows a lot of the players. The scheme fit is perfect for him. And so, you know, in his mind, if New England was going to be out and they were going to move on from whatever it may be or trade him, then the one team he wanted to go to was Dallas. And arguably he wasn't going to go and didn't want to go to a team that was going to be a non-playoff team and like the Dolphins, whoever. So he wanted to go to the next best fit. And that team for him was the Cowboys all day long. So he's excited to be there. And, you know, his goal is to win the division, you know, put a couple sacks into Philly and New England and get the team to the playoffs and hopefully Super Bowl.
It is certainly fascinating when you think of his personality, Robert Quinn and DeMarcus Lawrence, is something that we've sort of talked with the guys today in the locker room about. But I am curious, this all sort of came about as a bit of a surprise. I don't think a lot of us saw this as a possibility. Take us behind the scenes. Who initiated the phone call? How quickly did this come together?
Well, look, when Michael got suspended for the game, you know, last week, he did nothing wrong. He just had a discussion, and I'll call it a philosophical discussion with his position coach that led to him getting suspended for a week. I think it came down to, you know, Coach Belichick and Stephen Jones and Jerry talking and figure things out. So they kind of, you know, initiated in their end and then brought me in the loop, and we went from there. But, you know, yeah, it's, you know, I wasn't blown away by it. You know, Michael wants to play this year, next year, and he wasn't playing there. And it wasn't like he was doing anything wrong, but look, he's not just want to sit on the bench. He wants to play and contribute. And so I think the Cowboys looked at it like, look, you know, we can bring this guy in, a guy that can get after it and help us on that D-line and help Lawrence out and Quinn out and everybody else and get over the hump. So I think it's an incredible trade by Jerry and Steven. You know, for bringing him on right now to really help this team get across the finish line.
Now, when you talk philosophical, did it get contentious with this position coach? Because there are players that we have seen have big personalities in Dallas, and Dallas seems to be able to absorb them. We've talked to a guy like Jesse Hawley, who played wide receiver here, went up to New England and said it is a very different ball game. So give us a sense for the Cowboy fans. When you say philosophical difference, is this a guy that's going to get along with this coaching staff? We know he has a previous relationship with Chris Richard, but is this a guy that, in other words, is not going? Because, again, that narrative still has been there that he sort of wears his time out in places, and I'm trying to set the record straight to give sort of a better idea of how that went down, what he's like as a player and a teammate.
We'll put it this way. If Richard didn't stand the table for him and acknowledge who he was, this thing wouldn't happen. So, no, the Cowboy fans have nothing but positive things to be excited about. I've represented him for a long time. I know him and his wife and family very well, and I know what kind of person he is, and he's a guy that's a winner. He's a leader. He understands football. He's very bright. He's not just, he's going to think about things, and at times with the discussion in New England, have an open, candid conversation like anybody should be able to do at 32 years old, to have a talk with your coach about, hey, playing time or whatever it may be. These guys are not robots. These guys are humans. And I think some people at times forget that. And a healthy conversation is nothing negative, in my opinion. But no, he's excited to be there, and trust me, he's going to fit in great with this team and this locker room. And if any Cowboy fans are listening and concerned about it, they have nothing to be concerned about.
I actually agree. I think a lot of people were initially sort of taken aback by this one just because he is so vocal. And, you know, I've heard Jerry Jones and sort of his thoughts on the social activism thing. There were all these questions about Robert Quinn and putting up the fist, which hasn't been an issue in Dallas. But I think his personality, and DeMarcus Lawrence talked about it a little bit today, how he sort of embodies that hot boys culture. I actually think this is a good fit for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And in terms of that fit, you know, we know he's got the rest of this year, then he's got another year on his contract next year. Getting deeper into his career now, Doug, I guess last question for you here. How much longer does Michael want to play, and does Michael see this as his last stop? I mean, is this a long-term fit for him here in Dallas?
Yeah, I think he eventually wanted to migrate back to Texas. And so, yeah, I think he'd love to, you know, he'd love to be there for the duration. And as you know, when you get in this stage of your career, you know, these deals are all year by year anyways, for the most part. But I would envision him. Look, I kind of sit there and look at the crystal ball and see the Cowboys winning the division, hopefully getting the Super Bowl. And I would think that he would love to be there a couple more years after this. I mean, they have a big need for him. There's not many guys that can get the pass like he can. He still plays at a very, very high level. And, you know, this is hopefully his last stop. He has moved around a little bit in the last couple of years, but he's excited to be there. His family is, and he's happy, which is great. And like I said, in life, you got to be happy, man. We never know when it's going to end. We're all in borrowed time, and he's happy to be there and excited.
Well, great work. You certainly know how to make a splash and get him in some of these places that certainly grab the headlines. And he's wearing number 79, Harvey Martins, who certainly has a history in Dallas. Let's hope that he has the same sort of impact that Martin did.
Amen. I love it. And he's excited. Thank you guys for having me on.
Well, as I said to Doug, I do think that this Michael Bennett trade is intriguing. It was something we certainly didn't see coming. I think this shows that the Cowboys are interested in upgrading. Even though they didn't get the Jamal Adams thing done, it seems that they do feel like the time is now. They were out there. They were active. They went and got a guy that knows the Texas area well, former Aggie, but also a guy that brings sort of another dog to that defensive line, someone that I think is going to be very intriguing along with DeMarcus Lawrence and Robert Quinn. Now, can two dogs exist on the line? We'll have to see.
Yeah, no, I think this is a good addition. I think that, you know, Chris Richard, as Doug said there, Michael Bennett wouldn't be here if Chris Richard didn't stand up on the table and say he wanted him here.
Yep.
And so I think that Chris Richard having faith in him is a big thing. You know, I love my stats research and stuff. So, you know, for those of you wondering about Michael Bennett, two really good stats. First off, no player has ever hit Dak Prescott more than Michael Bennett. He's hit him 10 times in 3 games. He has been hell for the Cowboys to block over the last couple of years.
I loved your line earlier this week. If you can't beat him, acquire him.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they had to go out and do. And so the other one that I actually discovered today, which was surprising even to me, is that when you look at since 2015, so 4 seasons and some change, that Michael Bennett, the only players in the NFL that have more quarterback hits than Michael Bennett over the last 5 seasons are Von Miller and Aaron Donald. That's it. Michael Bennett is getting to the quarterback just as frequently as anybody in the league other than Von Miller and Aaron Donald.
You're such a nerd. I love it.
I am.
That's why I'm glad that you're part of my team. And I hope those of you that are listening have got some fun little nuggets when you are talking about this Cowboys game and the recent acquisition of Michael Bennett with your friends. You guys can be water cooler champs. Coming up on our next episode, we'll start digging into this Giants, Cowboys, and NFC East meeting, their second one this season. Going to be intriguing because, keep in mind, they saw Eli Manning to start the season, and boy, did DeMarcus Lawrence already give us a little bulletin board material when he talked about facing Daniel Jones ahead of this one. You know the New York papers are going to have fun with this week.
Absolutely, and also keep in mind, I mean, not only is Daniel Jones there now, but just a couple weeks removed from absolutely abusing Dak Prescott, the Giants have now acquired Leonard Williams. So a good chance for the Cowboys to get some redemption there and hopefully do a better job of containing him. But yeah, hopefully we'll have some preview stuff for you on the Giants, and then maybe we'll find out some more nuggets about what exactly went down with this Jamal Adams deal and why it didn't happen.
Thanks for tuning in for another one. We've loved your fan support so far. We'll see you for the next.
let him come here and take all the shine.